The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 27th of October, 2020. On the podcast today, Andy Hollingworth, Chief Executive of Tuple, TOOP, discusses why they've raised money and what the proceeds will be used for. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin news and its movement as well, because it's been rising quite well. I think it's just broken $13,000, and we talk about that. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of other content, including Iron Ridge Resources, an article there. There's one on Predator Oil and Gas. There's one on Ami Minerals. And of course, at the top of the page there, there's the COVID-19 index. Biggest rise on the index today is Inspiration Healthcare, up 10% to 83 pence. And biggest faller is Hemogenix, that's down 16% to 10.25 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple, at TOOP. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
And yesterday you did a placing to raise sort of $750,000, I suppose. And we'll dig into why you did that and what it's going to be used for in a bit. But as always, if someone is listening right now and never heard of Tuple, Andy, can you just summarise what the business is about, please?
Yes, certainly. Tuple is a business-to-business and business-to-consumer telecoms company supporting predominantly over 250,000 UK small businesses in switching their connectivity to high-speed bandwidth data connectivity, deploying cloud-based telephony across their offices and also across their mobile workforces, as well as deploying fixed-cost mobile connections across all of the devices supported by cloud-based apps. We're BT's longest-serving premier partner. However, we offer all clients a complete carrier-agnostic service to all UK small business and emerging businesses that work from home in the consumer environment on a fixed price value over the contract life of the customer.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so £774,000 raised. So why were you looking to raise money now and what for is it for then?
Well, quite simply, we weren't. Tuple had progressed, you know, really well since the acquisition of DMSL, despite obviously the extremely challenging market conditions that we all prevail in today. We've updated the market regularly on obviously the operational progress in terms of the contract wins that you'd have seen over the coming few months, and obviously also in terms of our financial progress, in terms of our cost savings and improved synergies that we have sort of achieved since the acquisition. So with that in mind, we actually weren't actively looking to raise money. Mm. However, we had an approach last week that there was a strong demand for equity. And the board took the view that we were happy to satisfy that demand at what we thought was an attractive price. Our rationale was simple. You know, the wider economic climate is obviously extremely volatile and uncertain. And I don't think that anybody truly knows what the full impact of COVID-19 is going to be. So with that in mind, we felt with the money on offer at a decent price, the board felt it prudent to satisfy the demand and substantially, you know, bolster the balance sheet. As I said, we weren't looking for the money, but the approach for the equity was there. So all we were able to do was use our standard list rules of use 20% of what was available, you know, as our overall shares in the market. We weren't into a secondary placing. We hadn't done a prospectus. We'd had no thought of that. But the outcome was that the placing, based on all we could take in, was 20%, was significantly oversubscribed and utilised all of our existing share capability of the company. There was demand for at least double, if not more than that. We had to scale back quite considerably. And I think that's another sign of the confidence in Tuple's business model and sort of the future prospects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are you going to use the money for, Andy?
I think this additional capital, as I say, strengthens the balance sheet. It continues to support the growth and will allow us to invest further in our targeted marketing initiatives. And clearly the net proceeds, they'll shorten our anticipated timeline to profitability and positive cash flow and obviously enhance our service offerings. And that's what we're all about is driving the acceleration to profitability and cash generation and not just taking revenue growth at all costs.
Yeah. And as far as M&A activity is concerned, can we expect more?
I think we're certainly beginning to see attractive acquisition opportunities, especially as a result of obviously COVID-19 uncertainty and the macro drivers in our marketplace means that our sector remains highly fragmented. So there's certainly opportunities that we're starting to see out there. This raise means that we are well placed to act as a consolidator if and when the right opportunities arise, and I wouldn't rule them out. However, I would stress that there is nothing imminent, there is nothing on the radar, and we will always try and look for all of the acquisition rationales, which is scale, skill set, and synergies. But without a shadow of a doubt, there will be, in a fragmented market, under obviously the pressure of COVID-19 as we move into 2021, then there will be the opportunities that we will be looking at.
Yeah. And you mentioned, Ed, in reference to the fundraise, you mentioned some more recent signs of confidence in Tuple. Can you expand on that?
I think we must remember that, overall market conditions for all of us remain challenging. But I think you'll see historically over the last few months, we've announced specifically the most recent one, a large existing client that actually swapped from one of the biggest carriers in the market over 2 years ago, was re-signed and extended his contract further, by further 36 months and added more services. So that underpins the experience that they've had with Tuple over the last sort of 2 years and said, yes, we want more of it. We've also announced new contract wins, which are providing all of IP services. So that demonstrates this macro driver in the market of the switch from copper and more traditional connectivity to cloud-based services and rolling out of next-generation infrastructure in the UK. And obviously then you look back on the fact that, well, we updated the market in September, that the integration and the synergies that we've created in DMSL have upgraded and over-delivered what we guided the market with the acquisition rationale of DMSL. So if you remember, let's go back. We said that when we bought DMSL, we expected to raise the synergies to achieve £50,000 a month of synergies between the two businesses by integrating the two together. We've actually delivered £130,000 worth of synergies a month, which has given us an annualised synergy and savings of £1.6 million. And that's being delivered now. That's not we've identified and we will deliver by this date. That 1.6 million was being delivered right from the 1st of October, if not sooner than that. Yeah. So I think that is what is giving the confidence. It's a mixture of continuing to win the contracts. It's in a difficult environment that remains challenging. And it's also a demonstrable track record that we have bought a business, integrated it, and being able to upweight, the synergies and the savings that we gave the initial outcome of.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you talked about the pandemic there and uncertainty. And of course, you service, the small and medium-sized enterprises out there. And there's a lot of companies that be struggling, maybe even going through. Do you see, this as a risk to your customer base?
I think no one can say for certain, what the next 2 to 3 years hold. I personally think we're not even halfway through this pandemic. Vaccine or no vaccine, you know, we remain conscious about the long-term economic impact of what businesses, what small businesses, you know, make it through, you know, this difficult period. We're mindful as a business of the economic impact on our clients and their ability to pay. And, you know, our teams are hot on this, you know, literally every single day, and we constantly monitor that. But as discussed, having more cash on the balance sheet at this time is really prudent, which is why the board made the decision. But if you then look more generally, you know, as far as sectors go, our sector is a really, really exciting sector to be in right now. You know, our services are more and more critical to businesses than anybody could have imagined 12 months ago. You know, changes in the way people work, you know, tend to happen in fits and starts. But the fact that businesses have now had to act really quickly and adapt, you know, to rely on telecoms where face-to-face services have dropped off and more people are working from home, creates a really positive environment for Tupel. You know, many smaller and medium-sized businesses might feel that the old ways of working do not return. And the investments they make in our products and services right now, you know, will determine their survival in the short term and the longer term. And with that, you know, it is an exciting and successful opportunity, you know, for Tupel. We're focusing on signing them up with the business, you know, not least because our contracts are fixed fee contracts, and we can provide to small business a bit of certainty to them, you know, in what I consider to be a tumultuous time. And that's evidenced by our recent wins.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, looking at it from that point of view, I suppose the thematics are on your side, the macro drivers on your side, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, look, generally a lot of money is drying up, but the government remains deeply focused on upgrading the country's communications infrastructure, which of course further extends our capacity to grow. This is not only going to change in a COVID or post-COVID world. If anything, you know, the focus is on 5G, 4G to 5G. The focus is on replacing copper with fibre. That will intensify. And we look forward, you know, to providing our modern telco solutions to the B2B market and the B2C market where people work from home off the back of the public investment in the telecoms infrastructure. And that's something that is unanimously supported across the political spectrum.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Okay, Andy, as always then, if someone's listening, likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, given those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and Vox and add Tupel to their watch list, please.
Number one, I think a sector that can be considered as robust as possible, considering the current pandemic pressures. Number two, a sector that is being driven by enforced change and public money through the government and the regulators, guiding and forcing change from a traditional infrastructure to next generation technology. And number three, a board that gives confidence with considerable sector experience in both organic and M&A growth.
Marvellous stuff. Andy, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks for your time, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He's the author of The Crypto Trader. You're right, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Last night, we both said, didn't we, Bitcoin was looking like it needed to pop. It looked like it wanted to go. It wanted to move.
Yeah.
And it's moved, hasn't it, I think?
It has. It has moved indeed. It's now up at, well, as we speak, at 13,175. So let's see, this time last week when we were chatting, it was only at about 11,700. Yeah. So it's come quite some way since then, 11,700 to 13,000.
Are you long and strong, Glenn?
I am. I've been long Bitcoin since
2005.
I'm a dirty trader, as you like
you
to call me. So I've been
trader.
In and out. But the last time I went long was several weeks ago, down around about the 10,500 kind of area. So it's been working out for me, and I'm also in a bunch of other cryptocurrencies. But interestingly, this time round, the other cryptos aren't behaving as well as Bitcoin.
How much is a bunch? Because I know the Americans say bunch a lot. Americans use bunch for everything. I got a whole bunch of that stuff.
Of lovely
what is
coconuts.
A bunch?
About how many am I in? Seven cryptocurrencies, which is probably too many, because as it turns out, as I say, unusually, most of the others aren't following Bitcoin up with much strength.
Is it a case that maybe Bitcoin just sucks all the juice out of all the, when it starts to move, people just move all to Bitcoin, do they? Is that what happens or what?
There is an element of that. That does tend to happen to some degree, because obviously on most trading exchanges, people use Bitcoin as a currency to trade other cryptocurrencies. So when they're all very excited about Bitcoin, they just keep their money in the Bitcoin and they don't have so much Bitcoin left over to trade other cryptocurrencies with. It's like they use it as the base currency.
What's interesting here?
There is an element of that, but a lot of the time the other cryptos do race up following Bitcoin. Sometimes there's a lag, though, so maybe that's what's happening here. Maybe Bitcoin has its rise and then the others all follow. I think most likely, if push comes to shove here, what I would say is most of these cryptocurrencies had a pretty good run recently anyway. So, you know, as we always see with any assets, whether it's stocks and shares or commodities or anything, where after you get a big run-up, you usually get a decent correction anyway while all the people decide to take their profits. And that sometimes takes many weeks to play itself out, or even months. And I think that's really what's been happening with a lot of cryptocurrencies. They're just working off their previous exuberance.
It's quite significant here, because this is now above 13,207, which I've got on the chart here. This is now above the close, pretty much. Obviously, Bitcoin is 24 hours, but if you do it in 24-hour chunks, then this is now above the close where it's peaked after the big sell-off, you know, after the big... So you had that big rally up in 2017 to 20,000, or close to 20,000, came back down the winter of discontent, the crypto sort of winter, and then in March, April, May 2019, started a rally again, went up to 13,000. Now, it closed pretty much there. Well, it didn't close as high as it is now today. So that's quite significant. We've got another bowl. We've gone down and around. If you flatten that out with a weekly, I'm sure it looks a lot more nicer, more smoother. Yeah, look at that. So
it does. We still haven't quite got past that peak of June 2019. Once we get past that peak, which is not far away now.
No, but if you look on a weekly,
about 14,000.
Yeah, it's higher though. Don't worry about the peak, because if you look at it on a weekly, it means it's closed. Yeah. The highest close in 2019 on a weekly.
Yeah, that's true.
Was 11,469. So this is quite significant. This, and the last time we closed this level on a
close.
On a weekly close. Well, last time we closed here, pretty much was back in Jan 2018. That's bullish. Yeah.
That is bullish. You're quite right. How many people look at it on a weekly chart? Probably a fair number. I mean, actually, one analyst on the Twitter pointed out yesterday that if we get a really decent monthly close, which is only a few days away now, of course, then that would look really, really significant on a monthly chart. We won't have had such a strong monthly close for, again, since early 2018. And he said that was significant because institutional money has been coming into Bitcoin for some time. And the big institutions tend to look at monthly closes. Or even quarterly, you know, that's when they mark to market, mark their assets to market prices, either monthly or quarterly. A lot of the time, obviously, it depends on their exact practices, but that is quite usual practice, particularly in America, I understand. So that could be quite significant if they all start looking at their monthly charts and going, wow, look how strong Bitcoin looks.
The highest monthly close I've ever had is 13,880, and now we're at a monthly close of 13,240. So this is so significant. Now, is it anything that led to this rise? I know there's big news on PayPal, wasn't there?
Yes, PayPal announced that it will start by allowing you to buy and sell cryptocurrency within their own PayPal digital wallet. And then, even more significantly, you can use those cryptocurrencies not just for holding, but as a funding source for purchases at its 26 million merchants. So anywhere where you can buy things using PayPal, you will be able to buy using Bitcoin, Ethereum, Bitcoin Cash, and Litecoin initially, though they may add more cryptocurrencies. You'll be able to buy things at any of those places using the cryptocurrencies.
Right, so, hang on, let me ask a question. So I got PayPal app here. So, are you saying that on that sooner or later, I'll be just be able to buy Bitcoin and store it on my PayPal app in their wallet. Is that the case? Because I've got Coinbase, but I haven't used it for a while and all that stuff. I've got the other ones, but I haven't used it for a while. So I can do that, can I?
That's right. And it's it should be available by the end of this year. So just a month or a couple of months. Consumers will be able to instantly convert their selected cryptocurrency balance to fiat currency with certainty of value and no incremental fees. PayPal merchants will have no additional integrations or fees, as all transactions will be settled with fiat currency at their current PayPal rates. So in other words, PayPal will handle all of the hassle. So you can buy your cryptocurrencies, hold them in your PayPal wallet. If you want to buy something on a shopping website, then if you want to buy it in Bitcoin, PayPal will automatically convert your Bitcoin into pounds, and the pounds will go to the shop. So the shops themselves won't have to worry about dealing with cryptocurrencies or anything like that. Now, there is one major drawback to all of this.
Come on.
There's a catch. There's always a catch.
We charge which you a big chunk of fees.
No, it's just that if you're a trader like me, it ain't that much use because they don't allow you to move your cryptocurrencies outside of your PayPal wallet. I don't think you can transfer in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies from your other accounts at exchanges or platforms or in your other wallets outside of PayPal. So they're kind of keeping it as a little closed environment. So it isn't much use from a trading point of view, unless you just intend to buy a bunch of Bitcoin from PayPal, keep it in your PayPal wallet indefinitely and never trade it for anything else or never move it anywhere else. So, you know, it's only useful in a PayPal environment, in other words.
Yeah, but what use are traders really? Come on, let's be honest. I know then you're one of them. What use are they to the society as a whole?
Well, it's not just for trading that is a problem. It's also if you wanted to use your Bitcoin to buy something from a website that didn't accept PayPal.
No one uses Bitcoin to buy anything. They're insane.
Well, then what's the point of this whole thing then?
You hold it as an investment and you're an asset, isn't it?
Yeah, but you could do that outside of PayPal.
A lot more people have used PayPal and have PayPal than, say, some other kind of crypto app like a Coinbase or something like that. PayPal is global, isn't it? It's massive. That's why it's significant. So
like I say, there are lots of places that don't accept PayPal. And, you know, effectively what you would be doing by buying coins within your PayPal wallet is you would effectively be, you know, it's like a prepayment card, isn't it? You'd be topping up your card with a bunch of money or Bitcoin and just keeping it there, like saved up in your PayPal wallet to spend on things. But the problem is you can only spend on things on sites that accept PayPal, right? So it's like you've put all your – it's like having a prepayment card where you put a lot of your money into a prepayment card and then you can only spend it at certain places, which is kind of annoying. Mm-hmm. See what I mean? So what I'm saying is, if you want to buy Bitcoin, why not just buy it outside of PayPal? Why not just buy it in a digital wallet where you could transfer it anywhere you want and do anything you want?
But hang on a second. So because PayPal is a crossover now into mainstream. Let's be honest. Most people don't have a cryptocurrency app. It's only the cryptomaniacs and yourself there. Or the hardcore, then maybe a couple of investors may have it, but it's not mainstream. Bitcoin is not. I mean, you spend a lot of time in that, so you may think it is, but it's not nowhere near mainstream. PayPal is a lot more mainstream than any other app in the crypto world. So some people may say, "Oh, I've heard about this Bitcoin, and now I've got PayPal. I can actually get it. It's easier. I don't have to actually log in or create a new app or set up a digital wallet." So it's just that PayPal is a $230 billion company. You know, that's huge. Sort of bit of validation for Bitcoin, isn't it?
I mean, it's true, exactly. I mean, that is the plus point. I'm playing devil's advocate there by pointing out all the drawbacks.
Let me ask you a question: Did the devil ask you to play as advocate, or are you just playing it without his permission?
Did you just take that role? We've got a relationship.
Yeah. Well, you're on a freelance basis, are you? I could play the devil's advocate where I like. I'll send him an invoice for this occurrence.
Exactly. If I'm the devil's advocate, that means PayPal are on the side of the angels.
I bet the devil's got PayPal. You know, it's a crossover. It works. It works in the digital sort of ethereal world, and that's where the devil exists. So.
Anyway, you make a good point, and that's why this is so incredibly significant. It's incredibly significant that a firm as important as PayPal decides to start offering cryptocurrency to buy and sell.
That's the reason behind the rise.
I think it's not the reason behind the rise, because as ever, if you look at the technical setup, it's kind of been heading in this direction for quite some time anyway. Almost as if it was presaged that this move would happen from a technical point of view. It wasn't like Bitcoin was falling and having a bad time for months and months, and then suddenly the PayPal thing happened and Bitcoin starts rising. But certainly you could argue that the PayPal thing has catalyzed the movement. It's kind of given it a shove up the arse.
I know you're the devil's advocate, but maybe the devil's advocate. There's no need to lose language like that, though, okay?
Shove? Sorry.
Yes. No, what I'm saying is, if you look at the price action here, in July to September, you know, it flirted with 12,000 and it didn't break out. It just broke down. Didn't manage to get past that three times, pretty much. And even in August, it did get up above it and then still came back down. And so three times it did that. And then last week, it got towards that 12,000. And then on the 21st, I assume that was the announcement of PayPal. So it went up by 7.5%, and it broke up through that, you know, that $12,000 level, and now it's into a new range, isn't it?
Let's see, 21st. Yeah, but as I say, it had been
I disagree. I rest my case.
Because it was already looking very strong. It had broken out of that
could have failed there again. Could have failed there again.
It could have failed there again. It could still fail, for heaven's sake. It still hasn't beaten the absolute high of 2019, which was at about 14,000. Though, as you quite rightly point out, it has beaten the weekly high, but it hasn't beaten the absolute highest point that it reached in 2019, which was at about 14,000. But my lord, it is heading that way quickly. We could be there by the end of today, if we're lucky.
It's looking really good.
Bottom line, mate, is everything's falling at the moment. Stock markets have been a little bit rickety, falling. Commodities not even doing that well. Gold is being a bit disappointing at the moment. Only Bitcoin is rocketing away, which is interesting and significant because it appears to have at least temporarily broken its link with other assets like the tech stocks, for example, which it's been following quite religiously for months. This looks like it could possibly be the fabled decoupling. That's what they call it in the crypto community, that Bitcoin has coupled itself like a train carriage to the NASDAQ.
Yes, yes.
All right, we'll just, you know, to the NASDAQ. Mm. And it's kind of been following tech stocks quite closely since March, really. And now this is something different. It's a little bit early to judge that it's a definite decoupling, but it's looking good so far.
Of course, Elon Musk, one of the founders of PayPal, isn't he?
Or Elon, as I insist on calling him.
Yeah, I don't know why he said that.
I don't know either.
I call him Helen. Helen Musk. He'd love that.
Oh, if only he'd get together with someone called Helen.
Yeah. So anything else? Any other news on Bitcoin? Anything else? What are you doing? Anything interesting?
There are a few interesting things because there have been a few people speaking out about it in exciting ways. The founder of Alibaba, Jack Ma.
What are you calling it?
What?
Say that
Alibaba?
Again.
Alibaba? What? Alibaba?
He's an Alibaba, then.
It's not Welsh.
Barber. He's a Welsh Alibaba. He likes sheep. Alid from, you know, but they call him Baba because he's a sheep farmer. Alibaba. The famous Welsh internet platform which sells everything.
Yeah, that's the one. So Alibaba. Swansea has been talking about, about digital currencies, because now it seems that the central bank digital currency in China, which we've talked about many times that they're developing, is now so close to launch. They've been testing it by actually giving people free money. They gave a ton of people free money and said, and stuck it in a digital wallet for them and said, right, try using it. It was all part of their experiment. And so people have been spending all of this cryptocurrency. Jack Ma has been talking about it, saying that he thinks digital currencies could play a role in a new global financial system. And he attacked worldwide regulation. He feels that the regulations need to move to kind of keep up with the new world of digital currencies. And he has a point, because the US is still sort of dragging its heels on that kind of thing. I watched an interview with Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, last week, and he was still kind of umming and ahhing about cryptocurrency, about having its the US's own central bank digital currency. They're still at a very early stage. They're still at the kind of discussion stage of the whole thing, which is a little bit disappointing. Also, what else has been happening? The Trump administration is concerned that the Securities Exchange Commission is ceding digital currency control to China. So now they're worrying that the SEC isn't doing enough to counter the growing Chinese dominance in digital currency. Though, having said that, President Trump has always been against Bitcoin. But, you know, this is a different thing. This is about a central bank digital currency. This is about governments having their own digitized currencies. So maybe he's on board with that, even if he isn't on board with Bitcoin itself.
So is Jack Ma, I mean, he was invited. I read something out on the morning podcast. I do a 60-second podcast. Jack Ma, the biggest. He's done Ma. Hang on, Jack Ma, not Alibaba. Jack Ma. Yeah. He's involved in the biggest float, biggest IPO ever, wasn't it? With his Ant Group. Is that the Ant Group channel? Yeah. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I think he's
34.4 billion.
Ant Group.
Ant Group. Yeah,
I get confused. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he is.
So it's backed by him, but it's going to sell shares worth valuing the company at 26.5 billion pounds, which is about $34 billion. Wow, he's done quite well. He's a school teacher. It's amazing, isn't it?
He has done rather well for himself. Yeah, it's quite remarkable.
The thing, how do you get from being a school teacher to being one of the richest guys in the world? And apparently, Alibaba.
By setting up a website, basically. Yeah, that's what you do. I mean, there are plenty of teachers setting up websites. He's just the lucky one, that's all.
It sells more than Amazon, apparently.
Yeah, Alibaba's huge. And Alipay, this is why he's talking about digital currencies more than anything else, is because Alipay is this massive kind of, you know, alternative to Apple Pay or Google Pay, that kind of thing. But it's absolutely enormous in China. It's far more significant than Apple Pay or Google Pay are in America or Britain. Alipay, you know, is widely used by a huge swathe of the Chinese population to buy stuff digitally. So already the country is kind of keyed up to do digital payments in a way that the rest of the world hasn't quite caught up with yet. They already have their little digital wallets with Alipay. So it's not a huge leap to start using actual proper digital currencies like the one that the central bank is developing there. So it's all looking very encouraging. And back to cryptocurrency itself, one more piece of news I wanted to mention is JP Morgan, who not so long ago
were saying
that Bitcoin's, you know, not the wave of the future at all. In 2017, the CEO of JP Morgan slated Bitcoin, and now, oh, they've changed their mind all of a sudden, would you believe? Apparently investing in Bitcoin is the next big thing, according to JP Morgan. I'll give you a quote. They say,
yeah, just deramping it. They're just trying to bring the price down. So they can,
Well, no, they're trying to bring it up. They're saying
now they are. Yeah, but
previously, a modest crowding out of gold by Bitcoin would take the price of Bitcoin up by multiples. That kind of thing. The most bullish commentary we've seen from JP Morgan on Bitcoin probably ever. And they mentioned the PayPal thing as well, of course. So
it's corrupt, isn't it? So it's funny how they're before they had a substantial position, they were quite bearish on it. Now they've got a position, they're quite bullish on it. It's like, what?
Well, you know, the thing is, if you listen to the major investment banks and what they say, if you were to trade based on what they tell you, you'd always be incredibly late to the party and sort of miss the exciting part because, they're naturally cautious, of course. They're enormous juggernauts that take a long time to turn around, to turn their opinions around. So, they're very late to the party with Bitcoin, just like investment banks usually are late with everything.
Yeah. Do you know what I hate?
Well,
it's making coffee and then it's forgetting about it. Just sitting there, I was chatting to you for 20 minutes and then just gone cold.
Just stick it in the microwave.
Sod that. Just make another cup. Stick it in the microwave. It makes the cup hot as well. And I can't drink coffee too hot. It's a trouble. If I do that, the cup gets hot. And
just put it in the microwave for a medium amount of time. Don't actually nuke it completely.
Yeah, I
usually do 30 seconds if it's a bit lukewarm, or a minute if it's completely cold. But 30 seconds if it's lukewarm. That's my advice to you.
It tastes different, you think?
It's not financial advice. It's just normal advice. Tastes different? No, I don't find it tastes different. But then I drink crappy instant coffee anyway.
I can't really help but think we've gone off the trail.
This is the coffee and crypto podcast. Yeah. Right, crypto and coffee.
Yeah,
I think that's actually a good name for a podcast.
Well, you start one up.
I'm gonna start that. I might start
cool marvelous stuff. Nothing else is there worth talking about?
I think we've done quite a lot today, haven't we? We've got through loads. Just a quick word on the stock market, I suppose. Disappointing. It's disappointing me. I'm not happy with it.
That's the way the market works, isn't it? From time to time, it goes up, comes down. You can't be happy.
It can't
go up all the time. It'll get more interesting towards the elections. Who are you calling? Come on, this time next week.
I think
Hang on. I don't want to know that. Don't worry about that. People can do that. Whether what you think, Biden or Trump, who are you going for? We'll know this time next week.
I've been flip-flopping in my head.
Well, don't do it now. Just give me an answer.
Oh, man, I don't know. I really can't decide because... All right. If push comes to shove, I think Biden is more likely to win. I've got an inside track for you.
Go on.
I got a buddy, right, who used to be in the American Army. And he's got a lot of friends who also used to be in the army, and they're all kind of blue collar type guys. Yeah. And a lot of them voted for Trump in 2016. Yeah. So obviously I was very interested to know if they'd vote for him again. Now, the feeling I've been getting is clearly they are nowhere near as into him as they were in 2016.
They were
trying to decide, should we vote for him? Should we not vote for him? He's basically acted like a bit of an idiot, as we know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of worn away at them.
Yeah, there was the facade of a bit of mystery, a bit of shaky up. It's a bit different from the establishment last time. They got him in. He's very rude everywhere, pretty much. And I don't like him too much. So, I think now the fascination or the novelty of wanting to shake up the system is gone.
It has, because they know it's not going to be. I mean, he hasn't shaken much up over the last 4 years. He's shaken some stuff up, but, I think they were hoping for something more dramatic. Yeah. So they're feeling a bit disappointed. And here's the last thing I'll say is the interesting thing
you
is
said the last
though,
thing you said five times
guys,
come on what
these guys are not voting for Biden though, they're all going for the libertarian candidate Jorgensen.
Yeah, what's annoying is that the thing is, you've got a chance to get Trump out here, right? And they put up a guy who's going to die before his next term comes around. Give him a reasonable alternative at least. Don't get the guy half dead. Biden is ridiculous. If they could just got a bloke that's say 60, and looked reasonably healthy, reasonably sane, it could have beaten Trump. And they brought a guy who's older than Trump. They said, well, hang on a sec, give people an alternative. It's like that thing before, the guy said, who was that? It was a joke once where someone was told by, I don't know what it was, you're going to win the lottery. No, that's it. Someone rubbed a genie lamp or something. I said, you're going to win the lottery. And this guy, lottery came round and it went, and he rubbed the lamp again and said, what are you doing? You're going to say, I'm going to win the lottery. So you've got to meet me halfway and buy a ticket, for heaven's sake. Biden to me. There's no chance. It's like Corbyn was not votable. Now, Keir Starmer, he probably is. He's half votable, isn't he?
Like a normal human being.
We had a robot last time, right? Which was Theresa May, and they got someone worse than her. So it's like the alternative wasn't viable. So at least now people have a viable alternative to Boris. And in America, Biden isn't really. So if he wins, Trump's done a really bad job because they didn't have to put up much of a contender, really.
I suspect a lot of people are just thinking in the back of their head, well, Biden's not going to last long. We'll have President Harris soon. I think people have kind of priced that in.
But she was less impressive on those that debate than I thought she was going to be.
I'm not a fan of those.
Right, marvellous, Glenn.
Not a fan.
Well, it's sexist, that's why. You don't like ladies.
I'm not. Do you hate ladies? I do not hate ladies.
Yeah, right.
No.
I love ladies. Either way you go with that one, you get, I love ladies, me. Oof, I love a lady. Right, Glenn, thanks for that, fella. Speak next week.
All right, see ya.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five is Novacyt, down 13% at 9.55. At four, BP, 1.99, down 0.25%. At three, Rambler Metals and Mining, up 5.8% to 0.45. At two, Vela Technologies, down 6% to 0.117. And at one, Remote Monitored Systems, it's up 24.24% to 2.05 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Contour Global, trading update. At four, Hemogenics, CDX development agreement, further extension. At three, Good Energy Group. That's good. Ticker there. Industry-leading B2B platform. At two, Amber Minerals, NRR update. And at one, Predator Oil & Gas, operation update, CO2, EOR, Trinidad. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.